This is the world famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ, and it's the Kevin and Bean Show.
You know, we get about 10,000 letters a year here at K-Rock, and I'd bet over 8,000 of them have the same question. Where can I hear the African bee porn again? Well, the answer, right here, right now, the best of Kevin and Bean.
Haven't we heard all our lives that the killer bees are coming, the killer bees are coming?
Yes.
Our joke was always, what are they, walking on their knees? Because I've heard since I was a kid the killer bees are coming.
Well, my understanding, and I don't have it in front of me, but my understanding is the killer bees were the result of some failed lab experiment in South America, like in the 50s.
You mean some scientists were trying to put together two different types of bees,
exactly,
and they came up with a meaner strain?
Right. They came up with it for some reason that was supposed to be good, like it was supposed to increase honey or supposed to do something. I don't know what it was supposed to do, but it got out. That's the key, is it got out. And then it got out, and it started killing people, and then it started heading toward America. And here we are 40 years later. Now Los Angeles County has been declared infested. They found a big hive in Santa Monica over the weekend.
Ooh.
And the guy, I wish I'd brought in the article, the guy who's in charge of, like, the agriculture
department. Me too, department, would have made this funnier.
In Los Angeles County says that all bees in L.A. County will be Africanized within 1 year.
All bees. Now, this is not the, hey, we have a sighting, hey, we have a sighting. All bees in Southern California will be Africanized bees.
Well, if that's the case here, then wherever they were, aren't all bees there now Africanized?
Yeah, sure. I would imagine so.
They're taking over the world is the point.
And you can't tell.
I thought the monkeys were taking over the world.
They are too.
You know, eventually it's going to be between the monkeys and the bees. It's going to come down to those two.
The bees is the monkeys' air force.
Okay.
But here's what's scary. You can't look at a bee like you can look at a pit bull and know it's not a poodle. You can't look at a bee and go, hey, killer bee. Versus,
nice bee. Nice bee.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know until they sting the crap out of you.
And they sting the crap out of you.
Yeah.
They generally swarm, right?
Yeah.
That's what happens?
That's what makes them so deadly. It's not that even their sting is more dangerous.
Is one sting any worse than a regular bee?
Nope.
I don't think so.
So you're telling me that any bee I see when I go outside could very, very well be Africanized,
yes,
and within a year I can count on it.
That's right.
Man,
that's
they're
right,
having sex like rabbits, these bees.
What are we supposed to do?
How do they take over? Do you think they come in and there's a big turf war? Or they come in and the regular bees are like, this is our city. And then they try and, like, they meet them at little bee bars and they try and, like, pick up the female bees and go, hey, baby, want to come back and mate? How does that work?
I think they have, they're just incredibly persuasive, incredibly potent. They just come out and
they're suave and debonair.
It's like
wearing little tuxedos. They look great.
Martinis. It's like when Ralph the New Guy moves into a new neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, every woman in that neighborhood is going to go through his bed. It's just there's nothing they can do about it.
That's true. Let's talk to Steve real quick. Steve, you might have, can you help us out with the story?
Oh, yeah.
How bad is it?
What happens is there's a European queen bee.
Right.
And there's the African queen bee. And when the African queen bee comes out, it goes around and kills all the European queen bees that are still in there because it's
stronger and it's better.
Yeah, and it comes out like 2 days before.
We can rebuild it.
They're the pit bulls of the bees. That's what they are.
They are
it's
the
bionic
bee.
Is it like a cage match? I mean, how is it decided? Or do they play Rock and Roll Jeopardy? What do they do? How do they decide which bee wins?
Well, because the African bee goes in and eats all the European bees.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's good enough.
Wow.
Nice little encounter going on beforehand.
How do you suppose the Africanized bees, though, manage to mate with all of the regular bees in such a short period of time?
I have the answer to that.
What's the answer?
And Steve, back me up on this.
All right.
I think the Africanized bees, when they come to Southern California, are bringing with them bee porn. Right?
And then
they get all the other European bees all hot and bothered.
Oh, makes them horny. Makes
right.
the bees horny.
They all get together for their Friday night movies.
Right.
And they're showing bee porn.
And it turns everybody off.
So like swinger bees.
That's what it is. I really think that's what it is.
Thank you, Steve. What is bee porn like?
I have some examples.
What? Is that what those little tiny cassettes are you were carrying around?
Yes, we found some bee porn. That's how it was. I found it in my tree. Out back. With a tiny little projector and a tiny little screen.
All right, so you're telling me you have bee porn.
Yes, bee porn. This is an example of the way that the Africanized bees are going to take over Southern California. The first one is just they have straight porn, like we do.
Oh, really? They have different kinds of bee porn.
This one is called hive humpers. It's the first example of bee pornography.
Excuse me, Your Majesty. I'm here to fix the tear in the hive wall. I see. Enter. You have a huge stinger for a drone. Why, thank you, Your Highness. You're one hot bitch. You know, that hive tear isn't the only hole that needs attending.
Oh, come on.
Come here, worker boy. Lick my honeycomb.
Easy. Oh, they got good music. How much more of this
do
we have to...
You like that big stinger in your egg sack, don't you? I'm gonna pollinate all over your face.
Okay.
Give me your sweet nectar.
Okay, you know what?
That's just an example of bee porn. That's how they're gonna do it.
Wow. That's the straight porn, right.
So you'd get the female bee from L.A. County up to your apartment. You put some of that on. There's no way she can turn you down. You're irresistible.
They also have... B&D porn. This is called Wings of Mistress Desire.
B&D.
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 I see.
You ready?
On your knees, drone. Yes, mistress. You pitiful insect. Look at that miserable stinger. You're hung like a worker. Yes, mistress. Now crawl over here and lick up all of my royal jelly. Now! Yes, Your Highness. That's not good enough, drone. You need to be punished.
Oh, no.
Maybe I'll just pull your wing off.
Oh, jeez.
No.
Well, that's sad.
That's
kinky.
Those are sick bees.
Now, does that turn some bees on, though?
There's something for everybody.
I guess.
That's the thing. Some bees like that. Some bees are gay.
You don't have any more bee porn, I hope.
Some bees are gay.
They don't have gay bee porn.
They have queen-on-queen action. This is called lesbee friends.
Isn't the hive nice and quiet with the drones away on business, Veronica? Yes, Julie. No one here but us queens. I wish I was as beautiful as you. Me? Look at your thorax. You're stacked. Your hands feel good on my exoskeleton. You know, I've never been with another queen before. Well, come here then.
Here we go. They have funky music, those bees.
Oh, God, yes. Put your mandibles on my wax glands. Your antenna feels so good in my honey pot. Oh, baby. You're gonna make me buzz.
You're just tuning in. We're listening to bee porn. That's how the Africanized bee is going to take over Southern California.
Who knew?
Producer Lightning, get the Museum of Television Radio on the phone. They're going to want to copy this tape immediately. All right, let's talk about the ridiculous ways that you hurt yourself, because a lot of stories are embarrassing, and you really just need to make up a new one.
Right.
Because it's just too embarrassing. Joel Peralta, I believe is this guy's name. He plays for Tampa Bay. He's in spring training with the team in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hurt his neck while getting out of his car to get sandwiches.
Now, he's a professional athlete, right? He plays Major League Baseball.
Okay, so athlete's a little strong.
Getting out of the car to get a sandwich, he sprains his neck, and now he's injured.
Oh, how'd you hurt your neck? I got out of the car. That's embarrassing. You have to come up with a different one than that.
It is a tiny bit of a surprise just because these guys are so worked over by the trainers. You know, if you're a professional athlete, you're always getting the chiropractic and you're getting the massages and you're getting the sauna, you're getting all of that stuff. You're not walking around like most of us are, kind of out of whack a little bit. So I'm a little bit surprised to hear a story like that. But I will tell you that it's easy to have happen. I mean, almost everyone has had an instance where they can't believe something that they did ended up hurting them so much. It was a total surprise.
Wasn't there another baseball player who hurt himself trying to scare his kid?
No, he was jumping on a trampoline with his kid, and then he busted out his knee. I think it was a guy in the Yankees, Chamberlain. And there's another guy who was having a nightmare about spiders, and he hurt himself.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You know what? Dustin Penner of the Los Angeles Kings hurt himself eating pancakes.
Really?
Now, how do you do that?
I don't know.
How do you get injured eating pancakes?
I don't know.
By the way,
it's breakfast time. Pancakes and syrup. Pancakes and syrup. Pancakes and syrup. It's breakfast time.
What about
you, Stryker? You hurt your tail sometime, right?
I always hurt my tail. Like, when I go on long
Stryker has a tail, by the way.
If you didn't know.
Okay, back
to you. Sounds weird to you.
Anytime I go on any airplane flight, I have to lean on one butt cheek because if I sit in the middle, it gets sore. If I do sit-ups, I have to kind of go to one side. But I was, you know what? I was doing a dance like the Three Stooges after I had a couple drinks.
Yes.
And that's when you kick your toes to your heel and kind of slide backwards. So I was doing that. I was going. I'm like, man, I'm doing pretty good. I slid right out from under myself. And a normal person, if they would have landed, they would have bounced right up, right on the tail.
Oh.
And it was not only embarrassing, but I've never seen valet parkers laugh so hard.
Of course. That's the best thing ever.
Stryker has a tail!
Tail. That does sound like it would hurt. We want to take your phone calls on the ridiculous ways that you hurt yourself. I mean, this can't be I was playing with a chainsaw. I mean, this has to be I was getting up off the toilet. I mean, this has to be like there's no way you should have gotten hurt, and you really did. And the smaller the appearance that you could hurt yourself, combined with how seriously you hurt yourself, is going to make the story all the better. So you can give us a call at 1-800-520-1067. Here's an email. I just got out of a movie late at night with a big group of friends. We were walking back to where we parked our cars. It was really cold out, so I was wearing my jacket. I had my hands in my jacket pockets. We were walking on the sidewalk. My foot slipped off the curb, and down I went. Now, this is about the time where a normal person would put out their hands and brace themselves for the fall, but not me. I could not react quickly enough to get my hands out of my pocket, and I fell straight to the ground like a tree that just got cut down. Can you picture that? The hands are in the pocket and you just hit the ground?
Oh, yeah. That's how I broke my nose. I did that.
Kevin did it. Yeah.
Really?
Running upstairs, hands in pockets.
I ended up with a huge bruise on my shoulder and a group of very entertained friends who could not stop laughing. So that's the kind of call we're looking at here at 1-800-520-1067.
Hey, let me just squeeze in one, Bean. I just want to tell you this.
Yeah, let's take Matt. Let's take Matt.
No, I want to tell you mine. Just real quick, and then we'll take Matt. Just real quick. Captain of the football team, leading, running in place, sprained my ankle.
Really? You were the captain of a team?
Yes. Running in place. But I sprained my ankle running in place. They're all running in place, and I'm on the ground rolling around driving. All right, let's go to Matt. Hi, Matt.
Hey, guys. I was playing cards and threw my back out.
Playing cards?
Wait a second.
Yeah. What kind of cards?
Just normal playing Crazy Eights or some crap just like that.
Whatever, and, strange.
Lean forward to write the score down and fell to the floor because I threw my back out.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't take much of a wrong movement for your spine.
Yeah, a lot of times that's later tying my shoe.
Excellent. Did you change the story when you told people, or did you go with playing cards?
I'm not that smart.
Dude, seriously, trust me on this. You weren't playing cards. You were bull riding, okay? Right. That's the story you want.
All right,
Matt, thank you for the call. 1-800-520-1067. We'll take your calls next on the Kevin Bean Show. Don't come running is what I'm learning from this phone topic here on the Kevin Beach on Carrot, because you will fall down. We're talking about ridiculous ways that you injured yourself. We're going right back to your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Ryan writes in on the Kevin Bean Facebook page, can't call, but I snapped my collarbone in half as a kid while pretending like I was tripping over a newspaper just to make my friends laugh. I jumped up in the air and fell to the ground with my body perfectly horizontal. I ended up being in a brace for 12 weeks.
Wow.
It wasn't worth it. Gina emails, I'm the master of random injuries. I stepped wrong in my heels on my way to the car one day, ended up in a foot boot for a month. I got a second-degree burn on another foot after I dropped some melted cheese on it, and I broke my toe answering the phone. I know there are more, but sometimes it's better to forget, although knowing me, I will end up getting hurt just typing this email. So apparently we have a lot of klutzes listening to us today.
I'll tell you, we do a lot of phone topics on this show, and it seems like our listeners have done everything. But when we get to injuring yourself in stupid ways, we could go on for days.
Let's start with Paul. Paul's on line six, and I think he sort of has a sports injury to tell us about.
All right. Hey, Paul.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks. Sports injury? Good.
So I injured myself. I dislocated my kneecap while watching the Laker game on my couch.
What?
I'm not sure that's a sports injury. How do you get hurt sitting on your couch watching TV?
I don't know. I mean, it was a good play. I jumped up to cheer for it, and next thing you know, my knees popped out, and I'm on the floor, screaming in pain.
Is this a previous injury that you did playing football? That never happened to you before?
Never happened to me. It's happened since, but now I don't watch sports anymore.
Well, I'm sure the sports were the problem. Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you very much, Paul. Let's go to Sean. Sean is on line seven. This is going to be a tough one for you to hear, guys.
All right. Hey, Sean.
Morning, Kevin Bean, Lisa May.
Hello.
How'd you hurt yourself in a dumb way?
Oh, so I was in the middle of, it was in high school, and I was taking a AP test, and the
tests are very strict, like no talking, no nothing. So right. A very quiet environment.
Right.
My pencil breaks, and no joke, my pencil breaks, and the piece of the lead, which I just sharpened before the test, jabs into my eye.
What? Were you erasing something? How did it go up to your eye?
My pencil broke as I was like writing on this, like writing on the Scantron.
And it happened to go right into your eye.
The whole tip entered my eye. The test, like everyone had to stop the test. My school called the ambulance. I had to be taken to the hospital. Everyone's tests had to be collected.
Some people will do anything to get out of taking a test.
Oh my gosh, I was a savior for like half the class.
Wow. Oh, wow. Was there any kind of permanent injury to your eye?
You know what? Thankfully, I was not. I was taken to, like, a really good hospital, and they had, like, some ocular surgeon that was there, and, like, he was like, you know, like, you're going to be just fine. So
that's amazing.
Thankfully, it wasn't too bad.
Crazy story. Thank you very much for the call, Sean. Appreciate that. You can always contact us on Twitter, too, at Kevin and Bean. That's what Karen did. I was unloading silverware from the dishwasher, and I threw my back out. My legs buckled, and I fell, impaling my chin with a fork.
Oh my God. This is nuts.
Apparently, the world is too dangerous to live in, you guys.
That's amazing, we get through those.
Let's try Teresa. Hi, Teresa.
Hello.
What did you do?
It is kind of around Halloween, and I was trying to climb from one window to the other because there was no way to get to it. It was just two flight of stairs down.
For what? To put up decorations?
I put up a pirate flag, yeah, in the window.
Sure, yeah.
And so
we've all done that.
I was reaching over. I fell back, of course, and landed on the stairs. Luckily, I landed straight on my feet and rolled down.
Right.
But when I got up, I couldn't stand because both were bruised. So
both feet. Wow.
Yeah, we're bruised, so I crawled back up the stairs. And
did you make up a different?
It was a week before I started a new job, too.
All right. She shows up in crutches. Thank you for the call, Teresa. Kevin, I'd like to hear you ask another caller, what did you do? That was such a beautiful flashback.
Thanks, Pete.
I mean, seriously.
Lisa looked up and started laughing quietly.
Let's talk to John real quick. John is on line 8. Now, here's the thing. You would think that laying on the floor, how can you hurt yourself? You can't fall from being on the floor. What went wrong, John?
Well, good morning, Kevin and Bean, Lisa May.
Hello.
You know, we should have been asking people, sorry, John, just 1 second, were they drinking?
Oh, that's a good point.
Because I'd be willing to bet that, but a lot of these don't sound like, a lot of them, like the guy taking the test or the woman emptying the dishwasher, those don't sound like drinking activities.
John, were you drinking?
No, I was sober. Right. I was laying on the floor and got up, took a step, rolled my ankle so severely that I ended up snapping a tendon in my ankle.
Oh, my God.
It sounded like a bunch of twigs being snapped at once.
Oh.
I ended up being on crutches and having an ankle brace for 2 weeks.
And this was just getting up from lying on the floor?
This was getting up lying on the floor, and next thing I know, I'm at the emergency room because my ankle is the size of a golf ball.
See, people don't get off the floor. That's the takeaway.
It
is amazing that we so often, and thank you for the call, John. We appreciate it. We so often in so many stories are amazed at how resilient the human body is, how much you're capable of overcoming and how much you can heal from. I mean, it really is incredible. And then there are other times where your body just sucks.
Yeah.
Or it just lets you down. Let me close with this email from Hernandez because I think this one's going to be tough to beat. Hi, Kevin and Bean. I threw my back out trying to masturbate. I had the porn up on my computer. I bucked my hips to unbutton my pants and threw my back out. Then I had to yell out. My mom ran into my room. I hadn't closed the porn on my computer in time. My mom was laughing the whole time. I was there writhing in pain. That is a bad combination of events, my friend.
But did he finish first?
Well, I don't think so. I doubt it. I think between the back and the mom, I think that's a big N-O. Okay. Just one more. Kenny writes in, good morning, party people. I was sitting on the floor. I was too lazy to take my sock off the normal way, so I grabbed it at the toe and pulled. It was really freaking hard to get my foot out of the way, but I kept pulling as hard as I could. Finally, my foot popped out of the sock, and my heel smashed me right in the nuts at about 100 miles an hour.
Sweet.
All I could do was curl up into a little ball of shame.
Yes.
P.S. Fire beer mug. Yes, hey. Indeed. Fire beer mug.
I don't know, guys.
Yeah. Well, you like my house? My house stinks?
It's the
Kevin and Bean Show on the world famous K-Rock. Ralph, I don't know why you want to kill Little Dave.
He I don't said, need a manager, Mick. Where would I need a manager?
Like, okay, enough. Ralph,
legs
come back
working,
to us.
Time is not working. Nothing's working.
Come back to us, Ralph. Ralph, come back to us. Why do you want to beat up on Dave the King of Mexico? He's a nice young man. He's never done anything to hurt you.
I don't want to beat up on Dave the King of Mexico. It was just an idea. He was talking about how he's been training with Billy Blanks.
He was.
Working out the Taibo, working out all the moves, doing the speed bag and doing all these moves, and he's been working at it. So I just pricked up my ears because I've been working out with a boxing coach as well.
Right.
And so I thought, for the sake of charity, wouldn't it be fun for Dave and I to get into the squared circle and dance around a little bit? You know, five rounds, a little exhibition match, something for the kids.
You got to have 6 inches and 40 pounds on him, though, Dave. Or Ralph, I mean, it doesn't seem fair.
All right, I'll box on my knees.
Okay. You have to tie your hands behind your back.
All right.
Both.
I'm a tough little cookie, Bean. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah. Dave's an athlete, too. He plays basketball like 4 times a week. How often do you play basketball?
3 times a week.
3 times a week.
Yeah. See, we get the wrong idea because during the show, Dave sleeps.
Right.
But that's the only time he sleeps. He's up all night every night. And when he plays basketball, I've played with him before. His little face turns red, and he'll run right the hell over you if you get in his way.
Oh, yeah.
He's a competitive
sucker.
He's
got stamina. He's in much better shape than you would think to look at him.
You give him a couple of drinks, he turns into just a maniac.
He's tenacious. He's got heart. He's got everything you want in a fighter.
I feel like you are suckering him in, though, because you've done some boxing training and you know what specific skills are necessary to be successful in boxing. It's way harder than it looks.
But
just because Dave can run back and forth on a basketball court doesn't mean he can last a round in boxing.
You are completely discounting his training with Billy Blanks.
No.
Billy Blanks is not a boxing trainer.
I come from the streets, man. I know how to box, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Ralph, he's not training with Billy Blanks. He watched the DVD one time, okay?
Well, that's sort
of
the
same thing. Dude, jab, jab, speed bag. Jab, jab, speed bag. I'm in, dude.
You're in?
I'm in.
So you'll get fired up.
Not to mention, he's got it in his blood. His people are excellent boxers.
I'm telling you, he's meaning business here.
Look,
don't think it's going
to
be a pushover.
Hey,
I don't think it's going
to
be a pushover at all. Is that what I'm saying? It was just an idea to raise some money for charity. That's the only thing that I just thought it would be fun to do. It just came out of my mouth.
You don't mind killing one Mexican as long as we raise some money for charity, basically.
See, here's the thing, Bean. You assume that we're going to be going out for blood. It's just not going to be the case. It's just going to be a fun exhibition match.
It's a sparring exhibition.
Exactly. Do a little sparring. People come out, watch us have some fun, raise some money for charity.
In this corner from Philadelphia, Ralph Garman. And in the other corner, the sleeping Mexican, Dave the King of Mexico. Somebody please wake him up.
That's how it's going to go.
You know, they say, let sleeping Mexicans lie.
Yes, they do.
Because you wake him up, and then you have real trouble.
And you have to pay the price.
That's right.
Yeah.
Dave, is this at all attractive to you, this idea of you and Ralph boxing?
Yeah, not only do I get trained boxing, dude, and work out and stuff, I'm going to punch Ralph. How awesome is that?
He's excited about it.
Well,
you're the only
to.
One that has negative connotations
How
about
many people
this?
Get to punch Ralph?
That's
and,
true.
Like, for work, you know?
And how many of us want to?
Yeah.
You know?
Everybody. We all want to, yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Why don't you get the ring with me then, too, Pete? You flying out from Seattle. You have about 6 inches on me. You got about 40 pounds.
Goodness. I would pay any amount of money to see that
slap
fest.
I'll be the underdog.
Yeah, I don't think it's really for me.
Yeah, I bet you don't.
I don't think it's
for me. Big talker. At least Dave has the cojones to back it up, man. He's a real man, Bean, not like you.
Come over here. Play a real man. Love you.
I fear bad things happen, that's all.
What do you fear bad? It's going to be fun and funny.
We're not going to die. We're going to wear headgear.
We'll put headgear on. We'll get the big 16-ounce pillow gloves. It'll be a blast.
Yeah. Lisa can fight the assistant producer Super Horror as the undercard.
Put Lisa and Alex on the undercard.
Fight. Right? Or the pillow fight.
Yeah. The lingerie pillow fight?
Lingerie pillow fight.
Feathers.
Feathers
everywhere.
And then we have Miss Double December as the ring girl.
This is getting better and better.
I mean, come on, people.
I
do like that.
Kevin doing the color commentating?
Yeah.
Come on.
All right. How long?
Kevin called the fight. That guy hit the other guy with... And they're hitting each other.
Something happened.
You guys do not know my boxing announcing skills.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Jim Lampley.
No, we don't. How long would it take to put something like this together? How much training would you guys need before you'd feel comfortable doing it?
Oh, year. Sometime in 2008.
How about like mid-February? How about a month from now?
A month? Oh,
that's not enough time.
I think at least 6 weeks from when I start training.
Right.
From
2 months. Start training. 6 weeks.
So mid-March.
Mid-March?
About 8 weeks.
Ooh, so this is like a press conference,
right?
Yeah.
So you're saying middle of March?
Yeah, I think so. Sometime around there.
Beginning
we'll look at the calendar and figure out a time.
9th of March, March 15th.
Don't you guys start taking vacations and stuff, though, in March? Is that a problem?
St. Patty's Day.
St. Patty's Day.
Good idea.
And then we can just go drink.
Now we're talking.
St. Patrick's Day
is
a good idea.
So you fight around, and then you drink for like an hour, and then you fight around, right?
That's
like
the name of the game.
Boxing?
Yes.
It's like drink boxing?
It's drinking and boxing.
Hey, I'm in for drink boxing too, by the way.
Oh, that's the best idea ever.
I don't know if Dave wants to fight an Irishman on St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day.
Wow. It's on a Saturday.
All right. It's on a Saturday. Alex says it's a Saturday, so maybe we do it on Friday the 16th then.
Yeah.
I like it.
Does it have to be during the show? It could be a Saturday.
No, drink boxing. It has to be during the show.
Yeah, we got
to
do it during the show.
You're not going to drink and box.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Drink boxing. Both of you are going to be forced to do shots, and then you can get in the ring. And then you do shots, and then you get in the ring.
Horrible idea.
I know. And I'm in. Who's in?
I'm in.
Lisa's in. Bean?
Drink boxing? Hell
drink
to the
boxing.
End.
There
go.
Drink
fantastic.
Boxing.
KOM?
Dave can drink all he wants. I'm not drink boxing.
Come on, drink boxing.
Well, I will vomit if I drink and box.
The problem with drink boxing is, like, you know how it's a sparring exposition?
Yeah.
If we start drinking, the punches can get a little harder, and, you know,
and
who knows? And, you know, who knows what happens?
Then Dave's going to get angry, and
you're afraid for Ralph's safety.
He's going to come at me like a mongoose.
He will. Yeah, then the headgear comes off. You know, maybe the gloves will come off. Who knows?
Then all of a sudden it's UFC.
Yeah.
Then all
Battle Royale.
Then I'm throwing elbows.
Throwing them bows.
Trying his jujitsu on you, whatever it is he knows.
Yeah.
All right, it's set. Drink box.
No drink box.
We'll see you there. Fantastic.
Finger Snaps by Ralph Gorman.
Thank you.
Milky Chance is the name of that. It's Kevin and Bean Show. It is 5 minutes after 7 o'clock. One thing everybody can agree on is that if you play for the Philadelphia Eagles, you're pretty much a dick.
I will tear this mother down.
Right? I mean, is that that's where
you
we're starting?
Start? You want to start? Let's do it. You want to go? Let's go.
I'm saying that's where we start, right?
No, you're wrong. Well, LeSean McCoy, shady to his friends, is a sweetheart by all accounts. From all my contacts back in my hometown of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, good guy, nice man, contributes to the community, clean guy, lives his life well. Friends say. Generous to a fault.
All right. I have a news report, and this is a story that just came up when? Just yesterday?
This week. It's been in the news about the LeSean McCoy running back for the Philadelphia Eagles. He ran into a little trouble in one of the local restaurants in Philadelphia, and they made a big hullabaloo about it.
Philadelphia Eagles running back LeSean McCoy may be able to juke the NFL's best defensive players, but his elusive prowess isn't just limited to a football field. McCoy dined at the PYT restaurant in Philadelphia on Monday and racked up a modest bill of $61.56. His tip? A paltry 20 cents. The restaurant took to Facebook to call out McCoy, posting the bill and his 0.03% tip. The 20-cent tip that the Eagles' LeSean McCoy just left our server on his $60 check is going to come in really handy for that new official NFL McCoy jersey he had his heart set on. The message posted to PYT's Facebook page reads, "This is a 0.03% tip. New record." Rob Nelly, McCoy's server, told NJ.com that McCoy and his friends were an unruly, disrespectful bunch.
See?
As soon as they sat down, they were pretty rude. I asked them questions. They weren't really responsive. They were cursing, making derogatory comments. I put their order in and forgot one of their appetizers, which I apologized for. They ordered things and once they got it, said, "We ain't eating this. We don't want it." The owner of PYT then took blame for making the receipt public in another Facebook post, but stood by his decision 100%. When reached for comment by a reporter for the Philadelphia Daily News, McCoy said, "It's bull****," but declined to elaborate. It's still not clear what led to the small tip, but posting the receipt on social media has backfired big time. Many Facebook users are criticizing the restaurant for posting the receipt, pointing out the establishment's awful Yelp reviews and calling the move unprofessional.
Unprofessional. So we have a new game for you today, and it's called Who's the Dick?
Beer mug?
Hey!
I mean, of
the... He's not actually in this story.
I'm confused. Yeah. I don't understand how this game is played.
This story. Okay, so he leaves a 20-cent tip. And yes. I'm sure there's a lot of waiters and waitresses out there that know the feeling of that.
Well, yes. And, you know, first hearing the story, I thought, I don't care if the... I think what the owner did was fine. I don't have a problem with it.
Okay.
And I also know, working at various restaurants, that the server doesn't always have much to do with the quality of the food.
Mm-hmm.
So if that was the problem, that's not really the server's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And she shouldn't be penalized for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he did get good service and he was an asshole and then he left that tip, I don't really have a problem with it.
All right. But...
You don't have a problem with the owner
calling him out,
publicizing it and posting it on Facebook and Instagram.
But what if he wasn't being a dick? What if he had horrible service?
Well,
if he had horrible service, that's a different story.
McCoy has since amended his original statement about the check, saying he did it on purpose. He said it was a statement.
It has to be.
He wrote
20
it
cents.
Instead of 20%.
Right.
The server got 20 cents.
That's worse than nothing, right?
Right.
I mean, basically.
Yeah. And he said, I knew what I was doing. I put it on my credit card with my name out there. I wanted him to know that who I was and what I thought of his service, and it was definitely a statement.
But he plays for the Eagles, right?
Yes, he does.
Okay. So you got that strike.
So he
strike.
Knew this was going to get what, out.
What is your problem, man? Your malfunction. You want to go? Let's go.
I don't really want to go.
Let's go.
I don't really want to go. All right, so... Who's the dick?
That's Eagles. Listen. Shady McCoy has a right to...
Who's the dick?
...do a complaint with his wallet regarding his service, if that's how he feels. Again, Philly's my hometown. I have friends and relatives who still live back there, many of them in the service industry, and they say that Shady is known for being a completely generous tipper in most situations. I don't know what is unique about the situation that led to this,
right?
But this is not ordinary behavior for the guy.
If you believe the waiter, and who knows who's telling the truth.
Yeah, that is the problem.
They were unruly. They were rude. They didn't need anything.
Right.
He forgot something and apologized. They didn't accept it, that kind of stuff. So who knows exactly what went on.
But then if you read the Yelp reviews for this restaurant, there have been people complained about the service there before, and they said they didn't have good experiences as well. So
they didn't have good experiences because it's in Philadelphia.
I will drop you.
Who's the dick?
You are, apparently, it's turning out.
So we'll take your calls, 1-800-520-1067.
But I want to say I think the guy's out of line. I think the guy, the owner of the restaurant, is out of line for publicly trying to shame Shady McCoy, saying, oh, he's a bad guy. Oh, they didn't buy that jersey he was going to buy because we're big fans and everything. Look, sometimes people stiff the wait staff, sometimes for a reason.
Right.
And that's the nature of the beast in the service industry, and that's the nature of the beast in the restaurant business. And I think it's bad form, especially if you're the owner of a joint in Philadelphia. You think other people are going to want to come to that place?
Yeah, that's true.
With that kind of behavior? Sometimes you just have to suck it up. And to bitch and moan publicly about it, I think makes you look petty and small.
What if it was Justin Bieber, though, that showed up and he did it? I'd fly there to go to that restaurant.
Well, Bieber's a dick.
Right.
And has a history of dickishness.
What if the guy was a dick?
Bieber has a history of being a dick on several, multiple levels.
Do we know anything about this restaurant? Do we know anything about that restaurant?
It's named after a bad Michael Jackson song. I know that much.
PYT.
Pretty young thing.
Why would you call your restaurant that, first of all?
Maybe there's a lot of pretty young things working there. I don't know. It was like a Hooters for ass men.
All right, so the question is, and we'll take your calls, 1-800-520-1067. Who's the dick? That's the question.
I'll sell it. Will you please?
Right. Who's the dick?
There we go. Now that's a game I want to play.
All right. So was it LaShawn? From what we know, it's hard. You know, you're just guessing just like we are. But all right, let me just put this out there. If he got great service and put a 20-cent tip, is it still bad form for the owner? He got great service, but he put 20 cents on his tip. Now is the owner a dick for putting that on Facebook? Or is it just...
Well, the owner says, I got to stand by my people or whatever. You know what? If you want to stand by your people, then give... If it was great service...
Right.
And the guy got stiffed, then reach into your pocket and pull out whatever 20% of that $60 check would be, which is, what, $12? And,
yep.
And give $12 to the waiter and say, you know what? This wasn't on you. It wasn't your bad. Here's 12 bucks. Go get yourself one drink.
Is doing that well?
No. And so... But no, he didn't do that. The owner didn't do that.
Right.
He went public with it to try to publicly shame a sports professional in that
city. So my question to you is, if it was great service and he left 20 cents, is it more acceptable that the owner went on Facebook.
No, I'm saying I think that's
either
a
way.
Crappy move.
Either way.
Yeah. I mean, if the waiter had done it, I could see him being sort of personally bitchy and pissy
about
it.
If the waiter had got on Facebook?
Yeah, if he had posted that thing. And sometimes that happens. You know,
right.
They'll do that. But for the owner of the restaurant to do it, I think it's particularly dickish.
The owner
of PYT. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's take your calls. Jason is in Newport Beach. Hi, Jason. Hello, Jason.
Jason?
How are you doing this morning?
We are good.
Hi there.
We're playing Who's the Dick?
Who's the Dick, Jason?
Other than Beer Mug, the restaurant owner is definitely a dick. Completely unnecessary for him to do that.
Why do you feel that way?
I work in the service industry, nightclubs and bars down here in Newport.
Right.
And again, tip is still considered extra credit. If, you know, you're getting paid an hourly, it's obviously a low hourly, but still, if you give good service, you get a good tip. If you give bad service, no tips needed.
I feel like a lot of waiters and waitresses these days, because they don't get paid much, I feel like they think they deserve 15%, and I sort of agree with
them. That's how restaurants justify paying them nothing, because they say you're going to basically live on your tips.
That's
so
the standard.
There
yes.
is an expectation of a tip.
Yeah, there is, and again, I agree that, you know, occasionally people just give bad tips because they're cheap people. But, yeah, the owner posting that, especially being that it was, you know, pro athlete, completely unnecessary.
The owner of that guy?
Yes, the owner of PYT.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go, Jason.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason. All right, so the owner.
Here's the thing. I was a waiter.
The owner is the dick.
I was a waiter for a long time, waiter and bartender for many years. And here's the thing. Yes, sometimes you get screwed. But, you know, a lot of times you get well over 15%, too. And I never felt the obligation to give that money back to people. It's like, no, that's too much. No, can't give me 25% of a tip. That's unacceptable. I should only be getting 15%. So I think it all evens out in the long run. Sometimes you just have to chalk it up to bad experiences and move on with your life. You just don't start posting stuff on social media saying, I didn't get enough money. Screw you.
But, you know, celebrities get kudos, too, when they do tip a lot of money. That shows up in social media as well.
Sure.
And that's a feather in their cap.
People do pay extra attention, if you're a celebrity, to what you're tipping.
Why shouldn't it work both ways?
Allie is in Tarzana. Hi.
Yeah, LeSean McCoy's a dick. I'm sorry, Kev. Sorry, Ralph.
Yeah, what are you, a Cowboys fan?
No, absolutely not. I'm a Raiders fan. Go Raiders.
Go Raiders.
Okay, why is LeSean the one that... Why is LeSean the dick?
Well, I mean, okay, obviously the server made a mistake of forgetting the appetizer, yeah, but, I mean, would any of you guys go to a restaurant and leave a 20-cent tip because the guy forgot an appetizer?
No, of course not.
I don't think
most people would, so it must... there is the possibility that the waiter was terrible. I mean, that's possible.
Yeah, and the owner has the responsibility of having the back of the servers, especially when he feels like the server gets...
But Ralph says the owner could do that just by tipping him rather than going on Facebook,
just
right?
Just by giving him the cash. I bet the guy would rather have the cash than have his receipt on Facebook.
That's true. At the same time, you know, maybe LeSean, you know, they were treating the server a little disrespectful and they felt the need to go on social media and do it.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. You don't know. Good. That's great. So we've got a no, and I don't know. 1-800-520-1067.
Who's the dick? That's what we want to know.
Do you want the reverb?
Sure. Can I?
Who's the dick? We'll talk to you next. Philadelphia Eagle, LeSean, what's his name?
McCoy.
Jackson.
Shady McCoy.
Shady McCoy. Went to a restaurant called and apparently they serve burgers there. He said he got terrible service. He left 20 cents for the tip.
Yep.
The owner took a picture of it, put it on Facebook, and tried to publicly shame him.
Yes.
So we're asking, who's the dick? Is it LeSean or is it the owner? Or is it both?
It could be some degree of dickishness on both ends, but I think one is more of a dick than the other. I think the owner's a bigger dick.
You think the owner is because we don't know exactly how the service was, and even if it was bad, it's sort of on him?
Yeah, I think it's just the nature of the beast. And if you own a business, you have also an obligation to not embarrass your customers.
Yeah, true.
It wasn't like he did something untoward. He didn't pee in a bucket in the kitchen. Well, he didn't pull a Bieber.
Like Bieber?
He just exercised his right to show his displeasure with the service with his tipping. And I think for an owner of an establishment then to publicly mock someone in a city where this guy has to work in front of the public is a dick move.
All right, let's go to Courtney in Long Beach. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
We are good. We're talking about the restaurant
in Philadelphia. What's up, Court?
I personally think that the restaurant owner is the dick, and I think that he should be telling his employee that if he doesn't like how much tip he got, go get another job.
Oh, snap!
Whoa!
No one's forcing him to stay at that job and make no money. Guess what? Grow up. Grow some, you know what, and get a new job and stop complaining to everybody. I don't understand why he thinks it's the responsibility of this guy to pay him. Go get another job if you're not happy with how much you got from him.
I do not want to work for Courtney.
I don't either.
No.
That's for sure. Have you ever been a waitress, Courtney?
I have never been, but my mother is a hairdresser, and she tells me all the time about how important tips are and things like that. And when I talk to her, I say, okay, I completely understand. But if you don't feel like you're getting enough money via tips, why don't you change your career?
Get a new job, Mom! That's what you say to her.
Then leave and go somewhere else. All right. Thank you, Courtney. All right. So that's a server.
Listen, servers bitch about tips all the time. I know I always did when I was working with it. You applaud and you celebrate the big ones, and you bitch and moan about the little ones.
Do they even out or no?
I think they do over a career. Absolutely even out. You probably come out a little bit ahead.
Having said that, I have once or twice in my life not tipped because the service was so horrible. Yeah. Most of the time I tip 15%. If they're good, I tip 25%. I feel like that person is serving me and this is all wrong. I should have to go get my own food.
Yeah, it's easy because they just bring mac and cheese and some chicken tenders off the kids' menu. Right. It's not a big deal. It's
like,
your meals are usually delivered in a box through a window of a car.
But you and I can get away with that because we're not celebrities. This guy plays for the Philadelphia Eagles.
So he should tip big just because he's a Philadelphia Eagle.
He should be aware, that people are going to know who he is and what he tips, and it will make an impact.
Well, I don't think he was unaware of that. Look,
I don't feel bad for him because I don't think he cares. I think he's fine.
He won
because he has a good reputation, and it's not a big deal either way.
Doesn't make what the owner did not dickish though.
Well, if he did this as a rule, then I really don't think it's a bad.
All right, I'm confused about who's the dick. I don't know what we're.
Well, let's maybe some of our listeners.
All right, let's go to Thomas in Riverside. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Want to tell you I'm the first time caller on your show.
Thank you.
Oh, cool.
Thank you.
Now, I really wanted to say this should be a no-brainer. Does anybody in the office there know how much the football player earns in a year?
He earns $7 to $8 million a year on his contract.
Okay, 7 to 8, and he's been what for a few years now? He's been making that roughly.
Roughly,
but
yeah.
We're not okay. Go ahead.
Okay, let me just hear me out.
Go ahead. All right.
My point here is the restaurant owner or even the waitress at this point make nowhere near as much money as this guy does. I don't know how big this guy's restaurant is, but I'm willing to bet, you know, my jewels that he doesn't make as much as a football player. So
sure.
With that being said, it should be very clear to everybody in America in a capitalist society that somebody who makes millions and millions of dollars typically should pay a higher percentage. In the 50s, the top 1% owners of this country were paying a 90% tax rate. Correct, guys? 90% tax, and they still had all their nice cars and
right, but Thomas,
so for him to tip, 20 cents on a 61.
But
and
Thomas, let me just ask this: it's not not about how much money he has.
It's not about redistribution of wealth here. It's about behavior.
It's about he feels like the service was bad enough that he wants to make a statement with his tip. Not that he can't afford it. He doesn't want to because the guy doesn't deserve it, or girl. I don't know who it was.
Here's what
my question would be, why did he go to that restaurant? Why didn't he go to a Denny's? Why didn't he go to some other place?
Because has damn good burgers. Damn good burgers.
Named after a Michael Jackson song. What's wrong with you? Here's what the waiter said in a statement. So, I messed up their order and didn't return to check on them the entire time because they were kind of rude. They didn't know my name, so I didn't go back to them.
Well, that's not smart.
And then the owner says, McCoy received immaculate service.
Somebody's lying. All right. Thank you, Thomas, for the call and for calling for the first time. Danielle in Los Angeles. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling. I vote that the owner is the dick.
The owner is the dick.
Why is that, Danielle?
Unless he publishes every receipt of every person that only gives a marginal tip, then why is he trying to shame this guy just because he's famous and he's a football player and he makes a lot of money? That doesn't negate the fact that he still deserves good service, and if he didn't get it, he doesn't have to pay the tip because they're not mandatory.
That's a good point, Daniel. Why is LaShawn being singled out simply because he's famous?
That's why he's being singled out, because nobody cares about anybody who's not famous.
Well, then this guy should put up a wall of cheapskates, and everybody who doesn't tip well enough should be shamed equally.
But if
it's about being cheap, then shouldn't everyone be treated that way, Lisa?
But nobody knows who they are, so it doesn't matter.
So nobody would care because
punish
no
him
cares.
Because he's a good running back.
Yes,
that's what you want to do.
That's what I want to
Danielle
do.
Says, well, not in my America.
Danielle says it's the owner, and LaShawn has the right to not tip.
I believe Carrie from Chino has an opposite view. Hello, Carrie.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean and Lisa May.
Hi, Carrie.
I think McCoy's the dick.
McCoy's the dick.
Yeah.
Why is that, Carrie? Are you a Dallas Cowboys fan?
No, I'm actually a Bronco fan.
All right.
Good enough.
We'll let you slide.
Well, because I used to be a server, and as a server, we give a service, and we have to tip out to the bartenders and the busboys and the hostess.
Right.
So if we don't get tipped, then we actually paid for that person to sit on that table.
Right.
And that's not right.
So it's an obligation for everybody that comes in to tip.
That is part of, if you want to go to a restaurant, then it is your duty to tip. If you don't feel like tipping, then you need to go to a fast food place where you can just grab your stuff and go.
Carrie, what about
sitting at a table? Go ahead.
What if you're in a terrible mood? You just got in a fight with somebody or whatever. You're angry, and you really do give them horrible service. They're obligated to tip.
I think that you at least need to give some money because you did sit at their table and did take up some of their time because they do have to tip out.
Well, but you tip out on what you make. You don't tip out on what your total table charges were.
We had to tip out on the total bill.
Sometimes they do it off of sales, Lisa.
Oh, yeah. We didn't do it that way.
Yeah. It wasn't out of what we earned.
Yeah,
it
but
was
still,
out of total bill.
Look, I think LaShawn's the dick too. And yet, I do think if you get horrible service, like if they never check back, then you shouldn't tip at least as much for sure.
Right. Well, what I do is I mean
that's the server's obligation.
Right. Exactly. So what I would give at least 10% if they're horrible, mm-hmm. and I would write a note because they have to know why they got that, you know, and a little note saying this is why you got this tip.
Hey, you weren't very good. Here's a dollar. Something like that.
Here's
for the other
change.
People.
Here's
have
20 tip. Cents. That's what he said. Here's 20 cents.
He needed to write a note or talk to the manager.
I think the message got through. I don't know if a note was necessary. I think he got the message.
Well, yeah,
but in a dickish way is what she's saying.
Look, I'm not saying he wasn't a dick. I'm not comfortable stiffing waitstaff. I don't do it personally.
Agreed.
10% is like my bottom line.
Agreed.
Worst case scenario.
Agreed.
I'm not saying what he did was great. I'm just saying the owner was a bigger dick for trying to publicly shame him.
We live in a world with social media, and we have to deal with that. And the owner has a right to put something on social media.
Yeah, he has a right. Absolutely.
It is what it is.
We're not saying anyone did anything illegal here. We're just trying to gauge the dickishness.
We're just asking who's the dick.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
all right.
McCoy's the dick.
McCoy and the owner. I think we got pretty much half and half.
All I know is I'm not eating at PYT. It's a pretty young thing.
Both are dicks.
That's our answer.
But the owner a little bit more.
Why does everyone hate the Duke Blue Devils? That's one of the many questions we'll have for Petros Papadakis when he joins us to foreshadow this coming weekend's Final Four NCAA Men's College Basketball. That's on the way from the Kevin and Bean Show. Right now, though, Parents of the Year is what they're calling this couple out in Middletown, Connecticut. I think we have some audio on what they've done.
Yeah, good parents.
Detectives say the video shows the 3-year-old holding the glass pipe. It then shows his father, 22-year-old Thomas Way.
All right, now, the 3-year-old has a glass pipe.
Yeah.
Okay. What does the father do? Dive.
Takes it away from him.
Dive for it. Grab it.
Yes.
Taking it from the toddler.
All right. Took it from the toddler.
Good dad.
Good.
Wiping it off and handing it back.
Oh.
After all that, police say the child is then shown inhaling and coughing, all while his mother, 23-year-old.
Oh, his mother must be really upset. She's going to get in and start yelling
at
him.
That's what they do.
Christian Algeri holds the camera and laughs in the background. They face drug charges and risk of injury to a child.
3 years old.
3-year-old.
First of all,
both
God.
Parents are in on it.
Lisa's outraged because obviously you should be at least 5 before you smoke pot. A 22 and a 23-year-old mom and dad.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of responsible 20-year-olds out there having babies. These are not two of them, though. I guess they executed a search warrant on their house and they found the video. And I don't know how you deny something like that if you're seen on the video laughing and pointing at the kid while the kid is trying to smoke pot.
Mike is so hot.
Well, producer Alex lined up the family house, and I think we've got him on the line right now. Maybe we can talk some sense into them and find out what the hell's going on with this story. Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Damn, it's all early.
I'm sorry, we're trying to reach the Lucheros. Is this the family?
Yeah, what's up, fool?
Is this the mom or the dad?
Nah.
I'm
the 3-year-old.
Oh,
no.
You're the 3-year-old. Why didn't I see that coming?
They're all at work.
Wow, you talk well for a 3-year-old.
I guess. Right. Damn.
Wait, your parents have jobs?
I think. I don't know. They leave and stuff. Do they leave you alone?
Do they leave with giant bags of weed and come back with giant bags of cash?
Don't do that.
Ray, come on. Put that away.
Everybody's all tripping out because, I smoke weed.
Well, you're three.
Yeah, but preschool's hard sometimes, man.
Let us talk to your babysitter.
Nah, I don't got no babysitter, fool. I think my grandma's here or something. Hey! Grandma!
Wow.
Give me a juice box! Damn! Bring me some Cheetos! Hungry.
Oh, really? Got the munchies, dude?
Hungry as hell, yeah, man. I don't know. So what? I smoke weed. My teachers, they look at me different. You know, they told me, go get your tattoos removed.
Wait a minute. How do you have tattoos? You're three. What tattoos do you have?
I got a weed leaf on my belly.
Right.
I got
your belly?
I got Lucy forever.
Who's Lucy?
Lucy's my hyena. You know, she's my baby's mama.
The baby's awesome. You're three.
Yeah.
You can't have a baby.
Nah, you're right. I know. I think she's a teenager.
Oh, wow. This is all bad.
I don't know how that works scientifically.
I don't think it does.
It's crazy stuff, man. Like this weed I got right here. And by the way, it's okay that I do it because it's medical.
It's medical.
That's right. Yeah.
What medical condition do you have?
Life is tough.
For a three-year-old?
Yeah, you know, I got strife, fool. You know, go to work and, my hyena's in my ear all the time. You know, you don't do enough for your kids. And like I said, my PO officer's always you got to go get a better job. You've been out of the pen for 4 months
How
now.
Could you already have been to jail?
Plus, man, I was at Build-A-Bear the other day, and this hyena's all yelling at me. She's like, your bear looks dumb.
Right.
And then I got, my AYSO soccer game sometimes, you know? It's there's a lot for me to deal with, fool. A lot on my plate.
You know, stress.
Sometimes I just gotta check out.
I didn't realize that the kids had their schedules quite this full at age three.
You guys heard that new Cypress Hill?
No, it's good.
Oh, it's clean, huh?
That's a really good album. I'm surprised you've heard that.
Oh yeah, I love them. That's what my parents were filming when we were all laughing.
I see.
We were gonna go see the show, you know?
I see.
Yeah, it was good. We went to Gymboree and then we went to see Cypress Hill. That was day.
That's quite a day.
Right. Damn, Grandma, give me that goddamn Lunchables or something. I'm hungry.
Don't yell at your grandma.
Like kill my high, man. Gotcha. I want some Cheetos or a juice box.
Okay.
And,
we're gonna let you get to that.
Lollipop or something.
This is about the time of year we start looking back on the year that was, in this case, 2014, and some of the great moments. And as you'll hear in a moment, some of the not-so-great moments in this particular case. Moments With, for instance, and beer mug interview questions. Those are the type of things I'm talking about. Today we're doing the top 10 DJ Omar Khan intros. And Kevin, you gave a mention to Omar lately. It's sure easy for us to come up with an idea in the meeting that then Omar has to go in the other room and sing about, right?
Yeah, it's insane. We come up with whatever the game is going to be. And then we just say, Omar, go do that. And then he goes in there and he has to figure out a way to actually do that.
Yeah.
What's your secret, though? How are you able to pull it off so successfully?
I can answer that. Drugs.
Drugs. Yeah. And just be going over the top stupid, I think, is kind of
That's
what I mean?
For me.
If you just don't go over the top enough, it's just okay. Do you know what I mean? The more over the top, I think the funnier it is, the more memorable it is. I don't want to make anything that just blah. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, I just make quality gold, guys.
Right.
That's the answer.
You don't worry about how annoying it is, too. And that's one of the things I've noticed about your intro.
The more annoying, the more better.
All right,
true.
So
I've heard
here
you
we
say
go.
That many times.
It's one of my favorite conversations we have all year long. The top 10 Omar intros of 2014.
There's the intro.
Oh, there's an intro for the intro.
Yeah, there's an intro for the intro.
The top 10 Omar intros. The top 10 Omar intros. And I don't think I really the intros are the best thing on the show. The top 10 Omar intros. And now it's time to let you know. The top 10 Omar intros. Oh, yeah.
So
now that one's in the running for the top 10 intros for next year, right? We can play that one.
I actually did that in 2013.
What?
Okay. Yeah, I know. Half of the intros, when I was going back, I had no
record. You don't remember?
I don't remember doing them whatsoever.
All right, we have 10.
We have 10, right.
What's 10th?
Coming in 10 is Ask a Lawyer. It's a parody of Avicii's Hey Brother. My voice rocks.
All right, I'm gonna say one more thing about how difficult this is, and I want you at home or in the car to just think, like, what would you do if the game was called A Slice of Nice Mice?
This is a perfect example of you guys giving – Ralph found it so funny in the meeting. He was
because
like –
it's terrible.
Exactly. Right. So he's all like, this is what it's called. Go ahead. And this is what I came up with.
A slice of nice mice. All you have to do is get some mouse today. A slice of nice mice. A slice of nice mice.
Not bad.
It's not bad.
Considering the name.
Yeah. Number 8, I did a parody of Wonderwall. We were giving away tickets to WonderCon, so we were doing the Wonder Contest, and this is what I did.
Yeah, 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 we're playing for WonderCon. This is
That's
some
so
powerful
stupid.
Singing.
Thank you.
What was the game for the jingle at number 7?
It was called It Takes Two, and we were giving away second row tickets to, I believe, Weenie Roast.
Okay.
And this is my – and I think Easy Rock had just passed away.
Okay.
So that Raw Bass song was kind of like, you know, all up in my dome.
Sure.
So I decided to parody It Takes Two.
Don't be a winner. Don't lie.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Getting jiggy with that
You're
jam.
You're as good at rapping as you are singing. All right. A couple of weeks ago, we were giving away tickets to this weekend's Acoustic Christmas Show, and we did a game with real Fall Out Boy titles, right? Versus fake Fall Out Boy titles.
Right.
You have to tell us which is which, and that game was called Real Boy or Fake Boy, and here's DJ Omar Khan's intro.
You guessed it, real or fake. That's all it really takes. And you'll be at Acoustic Christmas with your booty going shake, shake, shake.
Oh, yeah. How's that done, number one?
That's awesome.
I love that one.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. And number 5, we were giving away tickets to Breakfast with Jack White.
Okay.
And, you know, he's famously a great guitarist. So we were taking guitar riffs and playing those, and people had to guess what song it was from. And I came up with this song for Riff It.
KMB is here and we're in effect. Want you to go see Jack playing the Red Bull South Bass. Kevin and Pete Breakfast. Come on, yo, you have to show the guy that you know.
Counting down the top 10 Omar Khan intros of 2014. I don't even remember the game at number 4. What was this at?
So this game, I forget what it was for, what kind of prize we were giving away, but it was Lisa Shady. Basically, we gave Lisa some rap songs and she would
nobody
rap.
Raps better than her.
Exactly. So this is an intro that I did.
Was it Eminem at the Rose Bowl, maybe?
Maybe. I'm not sure. But I had some help from Lisa on this one. This comes in at number 4.
Cause she's Lisa Shady. Yeah, she's the real Shady. All you other Lisa Shadys are just imitating. So I'm the real Lisa Shady.
Yeah, yeah, West Side, Thug Life.
Thug Life indeed.
Lisa, what's happening?
You and me, Omar.
Yeah. Best team ever, right?
Absolutely.
At number 3, we were giving away tickets to Kevin Bean's April Foolishness, and Ralph decided to do Laugh-A-Rocky, since I'm the Omar-Rocky guy who can't sing. So basically what I would do is... laughs. I would impersonate somebody's laugh, okay?
Yeah, comedians,
so,
right?
Yeah, exactly, right? So this is a perfect example of something that really sounded good in my head.
Uh-huh.
So I was going to do a parody of Iggy Azalea's Fancy for the intro to Laugh-A-Rocky.
Laugh-A-Rocky! Omar really blows! Just guess the laughing!
you have to make fun of yourself.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I do. At number two, welcome to the OC. I think we were giving away tickets to the Ducks playoffs, I think. Maybe. Yeah, yeah, we were giving away tickets to Ducks playoffs game, so we did OC trivia. And welcome to the OC, I had a parody, Welcome to the Jungle.
Welcome to the OC, this is our game. Ducks playoffs, tickets you want, you'll never be the same. OC, welcome to the OC. Bitch, 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 bitch. Welcome to the OC,
wow. It's like having Axl Rose right here in the room with us, though.
A lot of cocaine on that one. Wow. A lot of cocaine. A lot of cocaine.
And how could there be anything better or worse than that?
And number one, it's we were racking our brains for, it seems like, a couple of years to find a new internet roundup theme.
Yeah.
Okay? So we opened up the, like, you know, not a contest, but we were accepting submissions for... listeners to submit it. And I was on vacation the weekend you guys did that, and I come back and I find a terrible beer mug rat one. Right. So I decided to do my own and actually replace the internet roundup theme. Here it is.
Yo, K-Rock listeners around the world, it is time for the internet roundup. So tell all the boys and girls, we've got funny and sexy, even music too. We've got all the greatest videos, and they're mostly on YouTube.
Nothing hotter in 2014 than Cameo.
Nah, you don't know, dude. That's what the kids are all listening to. So those are my top 10 intros.
The top 10 Omar intros. Oh, yeah.
There's a little bit of electricity in the air when some actual K-Rock legends walk through the door. Ladies and gentlemen, a band we've been playing on this radio station since 1983. Roland Orzabal and Kurt Smith are here. It's Tears for Fears on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hello, boys.
Hello.
Good morning.
Great to see you. We apologize for how ridiculously early it is, especially for rock star types, but thanks so much for being here. I asked you the question, how did it happen that you're on Acoustic Christmas and you turn around and ask me the same question? So apparently none of us know how this magic came to be.
I think money exchanged between people.
Is that right?
I think that must have been the case.
Some kind of bribery?
It has to be.
All right. Which direction? I mean, your camp bribe us or did we bribe you?
I think Bean sent me something in the mail.
Oh, okay.
It's Bean.
I was supposed to be private, Kurt. Come on. We got a lot of ground we want to cover with you guys. First of all, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for doing the show. We're very excited. What do you remember, if anything, about K-Rock back in the 80s? I mean, do you remember being on the radio station and being on with Rodney or with Richard Blade or any of those guys?
I remember lots of things. But I think the thing that stands out to me still is the Love Lines. Which mm-hmm. I did that in the 90s. Can you believe that?
And it's still on the air.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
That was always fun, slightly uncomfortable show to do.
Yeah, because some of the calls are so either bizarre or negative or whatever. It's like you don't really know what
or
to
serious.
Do.
Or serious.
Yeah.
And there's lots of mentions of diseases and stuff like that. And
a lot of that.
You know. I don't know, the guy, the doctor used to give me the creep.
Dr. Drew?
Dr. Drew, yeah, he's pretty creepy.
Just a little bit, standing next to him. I used to think, what am I going to catch?
Oh, you thought he had all the diseases?
Well, because he keeps talking about them.
Well, he does know a lot about them.
But I don't think he has most, thank God.
Beer Mug, let's save this tape for when Dr. Drew's on Thursday, could we please? When you think back, and we're going to bring it all the way up to the present and talk about where you are today and what's new in the world of Tears for Fears, but I'm just fascinated. What are the 80s like in your memory now? Is it just a big giant blur or a lot of vivid memories of just crazy things you couldn't believe how big the band got?
For me, the one memory is of some, like, it's like a big sunny day and a tour coach and everyone is happy.
That's it?
I don't even understand what that means.
That's it.
So to you, it's just a general good feeling.
No, it's just just one day. You know, not general.
Well, we had one good day.
Nice one good day.
One really good day.
Really nice day in the Midwest.
I think it was Madison, Wisconsin, I want to say. But
yeah, something like the Kansas, St. Louis.
Kurt, were you surprised that the group became as popular as it did to sell, you know, millions and millions and millions of records? Nobody expects that when they start a band.
Yeah, we never really thought about it, to be honest. I think when you go in and make a record, you just go in to make the best one you can at the time. And it all came as a bit of a shock to us. But, you know, then it did kind of become a blur when we were touring here, especially after Songs from the Big Chair, when it became huge in America. I mean, obviously for K-Rock, they go back to The Hurting. But The Hurting wasn't huge in America. It wasn't until Songs from the Big Chair that everything really took off and became a bit of a blur.
And then it was a blur because you were in every city and all.
Well, yeah, you know, this is a rarity for us to get up this early to a morning show. But back then when we were on tour, we would do it every day, you know, in every city we were in. So you really didn't have time to sit back and appreciate it, I don't think.
And you were on MTV all the time, too.
Yes.
Right.
That's when MTV played actual music videos. Yeah.
Well, that was right, when exactly. It was a music television.
But we didn't have to get up for that. Because it was just on film.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. What do you remember? You guys were very young when you started playing together. You were how old?
14.
14, yeah.
14 years old, okay. Mm-hmm. So by the time you make your first record, what was it like for you in England at the time when that hit big? Was it, I mean, you were still teenagers, right?
No, I turned 21, celebrated my 21st birthday in Abbey Road Cafe. Which is right at the bottom of Abbey Road. And then we had our first hit about 3 months later.
It was late 21.
And what does that do to you when you find success like that? And what's that like for your regular life with your family, with your friends? I mean, how did you adjust to it? Because some people don't, they want their music to be heard, but they don't want the accompanying fame and distractions that come with it.
Well, we lived in Bath, which is a sort of very touristy city. And everyone knew everyone. So it was like, oh, hi, yeah, saw you on Top of the Pops last night.
And like it was no big deal?
No, it's like no big deal. Huh. And the most immediate effect, obviously, is money. But I wasn't into fast cars. I couldn't drive, actually. And so immediately buying a house and buying studio equipment. So we bought this studio equipment to make Songs from the Big Chair.
Were you of the opinion, like, we need to strike while the iron's hot and I'm not going to have this money forever?
No, we weren't. No.
Not at all.
We were the opposite. I mean, management and record company were exactly that after we did The Hurting. They were, we needed something else now. And, of course, we took our sweet time until we were ready. So.
And that does not make them happy.
We're not known to be the most prolific of artists.
No. But you want to wait until it's right. You want to wait until you're happy with it. And that's why you're the kinds of guys who spent a lot of time in the studio, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think you also need a break. You know, you need to get back to some sense of normality. And, you know, especially when you've done like a big world tour and you had a successful album, you kind of want to go away and enjoy it.
Right. You knew when you laid down Shout that was a smash hit, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was quite incredible and quite lucky, really, because the initial idea for the song was just to be a mantra, like all we are singing is give peace a chance. And so the shout, let it all out was just going to go round and round and round until people got sick of it. But luckily, Kurt and I had to leave the studio that day to do the Mother's Talk video just up the road. And we left producers Chris Hughes and Ian Stanley, our keyboard player, to muck around with the track.
Right.
And by the time we got back, they'd completely transformed it, and it was like, whoa. They'd stuck a verse on, and we thought, this can we do this? Can we really
make... That's the strangest story I've ever heard of. Yeah. You guys left.
They force-fed
us a verse.
Built a whole verse.
Unbelievable.
And then we're thinking, can we really start a song with the chorus? I guess we can.
Oh, now that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I love the stories. One of the reasons that we love having musicians on the show so much is, you know, you've created something that's going to last forever, that's a part of all of our lives. And I'm always just so fascinated with the magic in the moment. I mean, there really is something magical about creating music, I think. And I can't imagine what that high is like to walk out of the room that day and go, we made that. Actually, those guys made that while we were out eating.
Those guys made that while we were gone.
But that must be something you must be proud of all the time. Every time you come across one of your songs on the radio, I imagine you still get that charge, I bet.
That's a hard one to answer. I mean, to be honest, we've heard some of the songs so much that, you know, when it comes on the radio, we tend to turn it down.
Yeah.
I really don't need to hear that again.
We like the cover versions.
Yeah, the cover versions are actually more exciting.
There have been so many covers of that.
Yeah. Well, and even people sampling stuff and the diversity of artists that have done it, from Gary Jaws and Michael Andrews through to Kanye and Nas and different people. So it's fascinating the breadth of artists that have used our music.
When they come to you and ask if they can use, you know, any part of the song, is it an easy decision for you guys? Does it matter on who the artist is?
Well, sometimes they don't ask you.
Yeah.
Is that right? They just do it.
Mm. Huh. Mm. Yeah. Huh. Mention no names, no, no names. Kanye. Kanye.
Sorry, actually, you got a cough there? You're right, Kurt? Yeah, eat some water. You okay?
Sounds like you're saying Kanye.
No. Ridiculous. Kurt Smith in studio with us. They are Tears for Fears. They are playing night number two of the sold-out 25th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas Show. Is this we're going to take a break right now, but before we do, is this your only appearance for a while in the area? Is the Acoustic Christmas Show? You're not on tour right now, right?
We did a few dates recently. No, we're not on tour. We're actually attempting to make a new record is what we're doing. So we're keeping the playing down to a minimum. But
okay. All right. This is your one chance to see the band then for the foreseeable future. And we'll continue to be giving away tickets, of course. I've got more for you at 9 o'clock this morning here on the Kevin DeBean Show. More with our guest Tears for Fears are here. We'll be right back after this on K-Rock. Tears for Fears in studio with us right now on the Kevin DeBean Show. No, you heard that right. It's Roland Orzabal and Kurt Smith from Tears for Fears. They are here and in town playing the 25th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. I said that wrong, didn't I, Kevin?
You did. You had
almost Acoustic Christmas. That's right, on December 14th at the Forum. Hey, do you guys both live in Southern California now?
Well, I have lived here for 16 years now, and one of Roland's many houses he keeps.
Oh, I see. Mr. Fancy.
Yeah.
Do you miss England?
Me?
No, either.
I was there the
either.
Other day.
Roland goes back all the time, obviously. Yeah. His family is still there. And he lives there most of the time. Do I miss England? No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, I've been in the States because I lived in New York 10 years before that. So I've been here a long time. My kids are Southern Californian. They were born in L.A., so I'm used to it here.
So you're raising some Americans.
I am raising two Americans, and I actually technically am also an American.
There you go. We talked in the last segment about the hurting and the early years of Tears for Fears, and then we got into Songs from the Big Chair, which, by the way, I think this would be a good time to mention that you've got something new out for Tears for Fears fans. Just released is this new deluxe edition of Songs for the Big Chair. Now, I'm fascinated with how you're able to put – I mean, how much stuff is in this super deluxe edition? 4 CDs, 2 DVDs? How is there that much material from one album?
There are countless mixes. I think the most interesting thing is this thing called a 5-1 remix, which means you play it on a Blu-ray player through your theatre system, because everyone's got a theatre system.
Sure, right.
Yeah? And then you can the trumpet pops up, you know, just behind you, and you go, whoa!
Didn't that's realize. Bizarre.
Where's the trumpet coming from? Yeah, so that's exciting, and there's lots of goodies in there. It's generally, I mean, I know the record companies can do this whether we like it or not, but I have touched the package. I haven't opened it yet because there's still a gold sticker over Kurt's face, which I don't want to remove. And it does, actually. It is a thing of beauty. Yes.
Wow.
He has touched the package. That's all I want to say.
It's a very neat little package.
So after Songs for the Big Chair put you into the stratosphere with all those number one songs, then came The Seeds of Love.
Yes.
And I remember at the time when that record came out, and of course that was a huge record here on K-Rock as well, I thought, here's a band that is so popular now that they can do anything they want, and they're going to put every idea they've ever had on one song in that Sowing the Seeds of Love. I mean,
it is, to me, it's like a champagne supernova became, you know, 20 years later. It's one of those songs that it just seems like there could be 10 songs out of that one, and you put it all together. Do you remember much about how that thing was constructed?
Yes, it was quite simple. Put in a beat on the Lynn drum, which was very similar to I Am the Walrus by the Beatles.
Oh, that I Am the Walrus.
That I Am the Walrus.
Not the famous cover version.
And, you know, 84 beats per minute and sort of got the whirly sound from I Am the Walrus and turned it into a minor version. So it wasn't very difficult, to be honest with you.
But there's so many backing singers, and there's so many different parts, different melodies, and layering, and it's complex.
There were a lot of different parts to that song, and I don't know why. It just kept going off on a tangent. In fact, some of them were cut down, so we reduced the amount of weirdness. But, it was a fun song to make.
Is it you come up with ideas, and then you try it, and you go, maybe not, maybe, and then it...
It's more organic than that. I mean, I think when you're sitting in a studio playing, it just kind of happens, you know. And as Roland said, there was actually another part to that we edited out. So even what's on there is not as much as what was on there originally. But, it just kept growing and growing, and we went with it. So
it was like nothing else on the radio when it came out. And even when I come across it now, it still stands out as just being such a unique piece of music.
I think so.
We've always said that we think, as far as production goes, that's probably the best work we've ever done, to be honest.
You played that live the other night on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, too, and you did that one. And what else? I think you did Everybody Wants to Rule the World as well. You guys sound the same as you did 30 years ago, which is we don't see that very often. That's very impressive.
It's because we're using the same computer tracks.
You're lip-syncing the whole thing?
Miming to the same vocal track. Yeah.
Do you guys like playing live?
Love it.
Live playing.
That's
is
what
fantastic.
It's all about nowadays for us, is playing live, because that's where it all makes sense.
It's sort of where the industry has gone, too. You can't really make money putting out albums. You have to tour.
It is, I mean, basically, it is the only place left where you can make make money. But,
right.
You know, and making records is a means to an end now, which is you make a record so that you can go out and tour with it.
It's changed dramatically.
Yeah, it's very different. But the fact that we love playing live, it's okay for us. So.
Yeah. You made a reference a few moments ago to the fact that you guys are working on new music right now. How's that going? Where are you in the process?
We're in the process where we have a lot of songs. We've never been in this position before where we have more songs than we need for a record. Because in the past, we used to scramble around for some. But this time, no, we've got too many. We're looking for someone who's going to sort of put it all together, really. And
you've tossed around double album ideas?
Triple.
How many songs do you have?
Assorted.
We actually have in the region of 37 songs.
37?
Wow! Yeah. So you need
In the region of 37 songs.
I say 37, 38,
okay.
Because 38 is called Dog Ate My Time Machine, so I don't think that's really going to get on the record.
Okay. I want to hear Dog Ate My Time Machine more than anything right now.
I'll send you a free copy. Yeah.
You need somebody impartial to come in and say, that's terrible, that's out.
That's what we think we may have found.
What was it called?
Smash or what? Trash. We need
a smash or trash
session. Just to get it down to 10 songs,
All right, let me ask you one more geeky record-making question, because I've always wanted to know the answer to this, and since you guys are here, I can ask. How did your song end up being sampled on Do They Know It's Christmas? What was the story with that?
Well, we didn't know, and we weren't asked.
That seems to be a theme.
It is a theme.
And we didn't even realize.
I think a lot of people are like, who do you want to rip off? Let's rip off Tears for Fears. They're clueless.
It was Midge actually confessed to Chris Hughes, our producer at the time, that he'd done that. And then we'd have to go back and listen to it.
It is the drum machine from The Hurting. And
that's the music that we hear at the beginning of the original Do They Know It's Christmas.
Of the original, and they took it off for the second one. Just to rub it in our faces.
So that was the best-selling song of all time, or close to it at the time, and it was all for charity. So did you guys get nothing for that?
Got nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. You're making a lot of good decisions.
Yeah. Sounds like decisions are being made for them.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. That's something else. All right, what can we expect on night number two, by the way? How long do you guys get? Do we know yet?
We don't know.
We haven't been told yet. Maybe you could find out for us.
And all right, we'll ask around.
We'll be playing all the big songs.
People don't
have no fear.
People don't tell us much either.
No.
So.
But what a night, by the way, with Interpol there, Modest Mouse, Imagine Dragons, Alt-J, Smashing Pumpkins, Vance Joy, Weezer, and a little band called U2. That's the lineup for night number two. We're so excited that you guys are in town. We're so excited you guys are playing, and it's great of you to come in. We really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
It's been our pleasure.
Thank you.
The great Simon Pegg joins us next hour in studio here on the Kevin and Bean Show, and we're going to save you 2 hours by giving you the highlights of Sharknado 2 in about 5 minutes. That's all coming up. First, though, I don't want the Ebola. I've decided that I'm going to pass on when it's my turn. When they pass it around the table, I'm going to say no and decline.
From what I've learned about the Ebola, it does seem like it might be a negative, as you bleed from every orifice and die, and there's no cure.
And I don't think they ask you, by the way, Dean.
Oh, really?
No, I think it just you get it or you don't.
Liberia apparently is now a country in Africa, and health officials there say the Ebola outbreak is above the control of its government. Our government has declared this as a humanitarian crisis. More than 700 people have died in Africa so far from the Ebola, by the way. Over 300 of those cases in Liberia alone. Several Americans have died contracting the virus in Liberia. Here's the quote that got me. This virus, if it is not taken care of, will be a global pandemic. So that means we're all going to die of the Ebola.
But it doesn't mean you can't have a party song.
Well, there is an upside to the Ebola breakout, and that is that there is a hit called Ebola in Town by a rapper named Shadow Smash. Apparently, it is all they're playing on the radio right now in Western Africa.
If you like the monkey, don't eat the meat. Those are lyrics.
That's the takeaway from today's Kevin Abid Show. Here's a little bit of that song.
Ebola. Ebola in town. Don't touch your friend. Don't touch it.
Pretty catchy, gotta admit.
It gets me dancing. I like he says, no eating something. What does that mean?
Shadow says the song is everywhere in every town, every village, every county, every home. Radio is playing it. It's in homes. Everyone is taking it. It's like the biggest song in the country. So how does a guy look at this health crisis and go, that's what I'm going to write a song about?
Yeah.
Like, how does that even happen? We asked producer Dave, hey, who can we talk to? And believe it or not, we have Shadow himself on the phone with us from Liberia. Hi, Shadow. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Kevin and Bean, how are you doing?
We're good. Welcome. Congratulations on the song. It seems to be a huge hit.
It is huge hit everywhere you go in the playing of the radio, in people's homes. Everybody listen to Ebola and is part of the song.
But a lot of people would look at the crisis in your country and be terrified by it. They would be sad, and it's not the type of thing that it would inspire them to write such a happy, peppy song.
Well, it is sad what's happening in the country.
Right.
But also the party song is a good way to get word to everybody not have more Ebola.
So that it doesn't spread.
Yes. Instructional well to say people don't eat the monkey.
I see. So if I like the monkey, I should not eat the monkey.
Do not eat the monkey.
Do not eat the monkey. Okay.
No, if you like the monkey, you can say hello to the monkey.
Right.
You can send the monkey an email. You can friend the monkey on Facebook.
Wait, they have email and Facebook?
Monkeys?
Yeah.
I do not know many monkeys.
Okay.
That's what I would do rather than to eat.
Yeah, don't eat the monkey. Okay.
Don't eat the monkey.
Right.
Right. Did you have trouble turning the sadness of the Ebola outbreak into a happy song, though? Was it difficult for you artistically?
No, it was not difficult because I took the idea of the Ebola, which is terrifying to many people, and I put it to a beat where people can be listening, and then they also be taking in the information that helped them.
I see. So they're dancing, but they're also learning.
That's right. That's what I'm trying to do with this song. It's not make smaller the problem.
Gotcha.
To raise the people knowing about the problem.
Now, we are unfamiliar with you as an artist, Shadow, here in the United States until the Ebola song. Is this your first song, or do you have other songs?
I have lots of songs, but this one, the first time big hit for
this
me.
Big hit.
This is your biggest hit so far, huh?
Yes. So it's good to have hit. Hopefully other musics I make now will also be going to in people's ears.
Right.
But once you've written about the Ebola, though, aren't you now pigeonholed as that guy?
I don't think so, because I have had many other ideas and songs that I think also people would like that are not Ebola.
Like what?
Like this song also I make called Hunter Virus. Santa virus get it from? Rat poop. Rat poop is not coffee bean. Do not grind it up and make rat poop coffee.
No.
Then you get sick with the Hunter virus.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the Hunter virus song. That sure is. It's kind of like your Ebola song, though.
I don't think so.
Really?
I think
it seems similar.
Different from whatever it did say, Ebola song.
I see. All right.
Here's another song.
Oh.
Dysentery. It's like a chocolate fountain.
Oh, no.
It's like a fecal hurricane.
Oh, no. Stop.
A sharknado of poop.
Oh, no. I don't want to hear about a fecal hurricane.
Alopecia. You've got a bald spot on your head. So wear a baseball cap. Or spray some of that stuff that colors your hair in. And then the people will not know that you are farting.
You have a lot of songs about the human body just breaking down, don't you?
Scurvy. Go ahead and eat an orange. It just means you need some vitamin C. Or try a mango.
Okay. All right. I like it. I like it.
Narcolepsy. You fall asleep when you're not tired. Wake up!
Oh, that's the hit right there. Hey, quick reminder, Arctic Monkeys going to be here with us live on Tuesday morning, performing live on the Kevin Beach Show. And while they're here, we'll do a grand prize drawing, and we will all call you the winner of airfare for two, three-night hotel stay in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and tickets to go see the Arctic Monkeys at the HSBC Arena. You can register for that. Get all the details on krock.com. Well,
you have some sad music before we...
Let me find some sad music.
Before we destroy people?
Because I think this is going to be a very painful moment for our friend Aisa, who's on the phone, that we'll go to in a second, and maybe other Hello Kitty fans. A scholar anthropologist named Christine Yano was putting together an exhibit she was curating for Los Angeles' upcoming Hello Kitty retrospective at the Japanese American National Museum. And in the course of her dealings with the company, they wrote back to her and gave her this note. I was corrected very firmly, she said. The one correction that Sanrio, the parent company of Hello Kitty, made for my script for the show is that Hello Kitty is not a cat. Hello Kitty, repeating, is not a cat. Isn't her name Hello Kitty, and doesn't she look exactly like a cat?
I dispute that. That's just crazy.
And all the merchandise,
yes,
is a cat.
It's a cat, right?
Now, the reason we bring this up is because our marketing director, Aisa, has everything that has ever been made Hello Kitty. She owns it all.
She's obsessed. It's her jam. Hello Kitty is her thing. She is not a cat. She is a cartoon character. She is a little girl. She is a friend, but she is not a cat, says Sanrio. She is never depicted on all fours. She walks and sits like a two-legged creature. She does have a pet cat of her own.
Oh, stop it.
Charmy Kitty. Well, let's bring Aisa into the conversation and see if she can help us make sense of what on the surface is apparently senseless to me. Hi, Aisa. Welcome to the Kevin Bean Show, my love.
Good morning, you guys.
Now, is this news to you as well, or are we just out of the loop on the Hello Kitty world?
No, well, you are, because it was released 2 days ago.
And yeah, we know that.
I'm actually at home, and I had to take the day off. I'm devastated.
Hello Kitty is not a cat. But why? Here's my question. They've sold billions of dollars. Aisa's collection is probably worth $100 million alone. Why do they need to come out and spoil your dreams?
Well, they have to crush all of my... I don't even know what to do with all my things anymore.
Just tell them that it's a cat. Who cares what it is?
Well, here's my other concern. They're saying that she's anthropomorphic,
yeah,
which is a furry. Does that mean Hello Kitty's a furry?
I don't know.
I can't wrap my brain around this.
I don't know either, but I'm going to go with yes. That's what it means.
They say that she is a little girl. Her name is Kitty White. She is a Scorpio who adores apple pie. She's in third grade. She lives outside of London. But again, she's not a cat. She has a boyfriend? She's in third grade. What a whore.
Daniel.
Wait, what's her boyfriend's name?
Dear Daniel is her boyfriend, and he also looks like a cat.
You know what? Not. Not a cat.
He's got to be a little boy then, too. Now, please explain, because this is the most curious thing about the whole reveal for me, Aisa, and I'm sure you've spent some time talking about it. Why does her pet cat look almost exactly like Hello Kitty herself? The pet cat just has a different ribbon, right? But otherwise, it's a twin.
No, technically, it's Charmy Kitty, and she's a Persian.
Wow. Wow.
She listens to everything Hello Kitty says.
You know I love you, Aisa, but you are insane.
So Charmy Kitty is different how from Hello Kitty in terms of what they do and say and how they act?
Well, here's the difference. Hello Kitty, as they stated, has never been depicted on all fours, so she's technically not a cat. Charmy Kitty is a cat, and she's often on all fours. So if you're on all fours, does that mean you're a cat?
Well, I think Dear Daniel has probably seen her on all fours.
Oh, you're
the one who brought up that she's got a boyfriend. She's in third grade, for God's sakes, Aisa.
She has a boyfriend. She has a boyfriend. I can't handle this devastation.
What are you going to do? Are you going to have a massive sale?
No.
Everything must go?
Well, you know, Kevin, half that stuff is from you.
I know.
You encourage this madness.
I know. But there's nothing more to buy, A.
Well, they keep coming out with new stuff all the time.
And
there's
B,
always something new.
It's not a cat.
Stop, Kevin.
So I'm saying for me, that ruins it.
My love of
Hello Kitty has been dampened.
So are you still
damaged a long time ago when I started?
Are you still invested in what are they saying? I'm sure you're on the Hello Kitty chat rooms. What are they all saying? Like what's people's reaction? Are people going to stick with it?
If she has ears, a tail, and whiskers, she's a cat. So she's not a cat, but she's a cat. She's a cat.
So they're just refusing the truth. They're just saying wrong. It's a cat.
I don't. Well, okay, are they going to tell me Grumpy Cat's not a cat, too?
Well, Grumpy Cat is a cat, though. Grumpy Cat's an actual cat.
Well, that's what we thought about Hello Kitty.
Well, that's true, too. I mean, look, at some point, and turn the radio down, kids under 11, at some point, you just have to come to grips with whatever you want Santa Claus to be, and maybe that's what Hello Kitty is like for you, is you want to believe, so you will.
Don't ruin Santa Claus for me, too.
Not at all. Not at all. All right, so you're going to just take the weekend and just think about it, just quiet reflection, right?
I'm going to think about it, and I might have to switch over to loving Groot now.
Okay.
Oh, Groot. Groot's,
Groot's
awesome.
A good choice. Nothing wrong
I
with Groot.
I think Groot's a tree.
All right, Aisa.
Is he a tree? What is he? A tree? A cat?
I don't know.
It's impossible to tell.
I love, but I hate you guys. You just made my day even more difficult.
Thanks, darling.
Bye now. All right, let's talk about bad online dating. I don't know if you saw this story. A woman was accused of illegally entering a Thousand Oaks home of a man that she had gone on multiple dates with. She met online. She was trying to get into the house through the chimney.
Is that because he wouldn't let her in through the door?
Well, he wasn't home at the time.
Okay.
And we don't know if she knew that or not, but she literally got up on his roof and tried to go down the chimney. Then she got stuck. And the fire department had to rescue her.
There's a woman stuck in the chimney.
Firefighters then mixing up some dish soap and water, and down the chimney it went. First responders were having quite the time pulling out the 23-year-old Ventura County woman.
After they had dismantled about 5-6 feet of the chimney, her hands finally popped up, and her hands were filthy black.
She seemed totally cool until the first flag was her actually being on my roof 2 weeks ago.
Little did he know, a little foreshadowing. This is the guy who lives there. He met her online and dated a few times, and he says he cut it off. 23-year-old Genoveva Nunez Figueroa booked for a legal entry, and he wasn't home at the time.
Yeah, I hope she gets help. I hope she stays offline. Well, even if she was online, people are probably going to know who she is now. So, you know, that you're welcome. You know.
All right. I have a couple of thoughts here. First of all, unless you're Santa Claus, you can't get into someone's home through the chimney.
Do you think that was what was going through her mind? Because that's really the only – I was trying to think of any other reason you would think you could fit.
I think it is.
Yeah, I do too.
Because I don't think I've ever heard of another story of anyone being able to get down a chimney.
It's clearly just a story, but maybe that's what puts in your mind, maybe there's room.
Yeah, maybe so. All right, that's thing one. Thing two is, I think part of the reason this story caught fire online and on TV is because they met online. And I think that's bogus. I don't think that. I think the fact that they met online has nothing to do with this story.
He could have met her in real life, and it would have ended up the same.
Exactly. For some reason, like, I had listeners writing me when they saw this story saying, this is why you shouldn't date online, which is a ridiculous reaction to that. First of all, many people, if not most people, meet online nowadays. It's not uncommon at all. And people are people, and it's there are a fair amount of crazy people online, fair amount of crazy people in real life. I think that's irrelevant to the story.
But I think the only issue is that maybe she was able to disguise her craziness through online.
But they had six dates, though.
That's on him.
Yeah, I would say so, too.
Look, this goes south in a lot of ways, and that is funny to us. Forgive us. But 1-800-520-1067, online dating.
Online dating it is.
That went south. We'll take your call.
Oh, this is going to be fun. We're taking your online dating disasters here on the Kevin and Bean Show based on that story at 1000 Oaks about a woman that had been dating a guy for a couple of weeks and ended up trying to get into his house through his chimney. Police had to be involved. Firefighters had to come and rescue her. He was like, yeah, I should have known there was trouble when I saw her up on the roof a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, how many times has she been on his roof?
I don't.
What the hell?
Right when you call police.
They also had to take apart his chimney.
Yeah, completely.
To get her out. That's awesome. All right, let's start with Susie, who's in Long Beach. Hi, Susie.
Yes.
Online dating. Disasters.
I have several, but there's a really good one.
All right.
The guy showed up drunk, and I didn't catch it until a few sips into my wine, and then I realized I needed to down that wine very quickly to even be close to his level.
Wow.
Yeah.
This was the first time you ever met him?
Yep.
Showed up drunk.
First time.
Good
start. I was just like, okay. He said he was at dinner. We were just meeting for cocktails. He was at dinner with coworkers, supposedly. And I think he had one too many sake bombs. I have no idea.
Yeah. But, was this a dating site like a Match.com or a Tinder or what?
This was my very first Tinder date.
All right.
Yeah, go figure.
Welcome to the suck. Thank you, Susie. Appreciate the call. Rebecca writes in, I can't call in, guys, but I wanted to share. I started talking to a guy on Tinder recently. It went on for several hours. It got into texting. We were heavily flirting. We even made plans to meet up over the weekend. Next thing I know, I wake up to this text. This is his wife. Who the F are you?
Oh, right.
Good times, Rebecca.
All right.
Wow. Let's try Ryan in Anaheim, shall we? He's online, too.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Kevin and Bean, Lisa May.
Hello.
What happened with your online dating disaster?
Well, it was Craigslist, and I'm married now, so I've seen Lifetime, so I knew that was a bad idea. But went on Craigslist and basically met this girl, went on two dates. Second date, we go to a little hibachi steakhouse in a strip mall, and I happen to mention, oh, my mom gets her nails done over there. Just, you know, conversation. Didn't call her after that date. You know, it didn't go badly, just didn't call her. She went to the nail place, and they had that big schedule book, and somehow saw when my mom was going to be there.
Oh, my God.
Set up her appointment to be there, went there three times, and my mom, you know, is a talker, so immediately said, oh, I have four boys, Ryan, Kyle, Chad, Evan, starts talking about all of us. And long story short, she throws a barbecue a couple weeks after their last nail appointment, and she's there. She got invited by my mom.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
That's scary.
Did you pull your mom aside and say, hey?
Immediately to the garage. I'm like, Mom, come grab a beer with me. Mom, get me out of here.
Stage four cleaner.
Tell the boys, seriously, don't talk to this girl. This is what's going on. She ended up never going back to that nail place again out of fear.
Hey, how about less personal information about your mom on a first date?
Yeah, by the way. I think half of this is on you, Ryan. She never should have contacted you again after you brought that up.
Well, you know, mani-pedi habits are traceable, you know. So
sure.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Sure. Thank you for the call, sir. Appreciate that. Let's go to Paola on line three in Santa Ana.
Hi, Paola.
Hi, guys. How we doing?
Very good. Thank you. Online dating disasters.
Well, I got an OkCupid account, and I ended up going on this date with a guy that I was talking to for a while who looked really familiar, who looked a lot like my ex. Turns out it was my ex's cousin just trying to get information for my ex.
Wow. So
yeah.
Your ex sent him in undercover to try to find out what was up with you.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Now, wait a minute. Who's the bad one here?
Her ex is. I think her ex is.
I don't know. I'm saying, is there a lot to find out about this girl?
Not at all. I guess he was just trying to figure out what was going on. And turns out my ex was actually at the same place while we were eating.
Okay. That's creepy.
All right, it's no longer you. Now it's him.
Okay. Thank you for the call. Let's try Heather in Encino. She's on line six.
Hi, Heather.
Good morning, Kevin and Bina and Lisa May.
Hello.
Ooh, hi, Heather.
Hello.
What's going on?
Take it
easy. So my first date was on...
Kevin, you know all Heathers are hot. You know that, right?
But okay. I don't have
Let's just spend a little time with our guests.
But don't go all creepy.
I wasn't going to. I was just saying hi. I just want to see what's up.
Ooh, hi, Heather.
Ooh. All right, Heather, you have the floor.
Okay, so plenty of fish. First date was great. Plenty in common. Great first kiss. Everything was good. Second date, we go to his house to watch a movie, which I guess should have been a red flag. Okay. We're watching the movie, decide to start making out a little bit. We lay down, and he starts humping my leg.
Humping your leg?
Oh, my God.
Like a dog.
Like a dog?
Just above my knee, grinding on my leg.
Oh, that's charming.
Had you ever dated Brad Williams before, or was this the first time?
I wish it had been Brad Williams. That would have been better.
What does a girl do in that situation? Like, what do you say?
I'll be right back.
Boy.
I kind of pushed him, and I was like, what are you doing? And then the best part is he goes, wait, so you're telling me you're not having fun? And I was like, not really, but okay. So we set up, we start watching the movie again. He tries to start making out with me again and starts humping my leg again.
So that was just his thing.
Heather, mm-hmm. I got to tell you, the first time's on him, but the second time's on you. I mean, he humped your leg.
The first day was good. I figured it couldn't be all bad.
That's awesome. You must have really wanted to see that movie, Heather.
It was a good movie.
Not since Boston mobster Whitey Bulger was arrested last year has there been this much excitement in the FBI, because they were part of the operation that put El Chapo behind bars. This is a fascinating story. This drug lord, Kevin, that they captured Friday. Well, let's hear a little bit of the news, and then we'll tell you why this guy is maybe the most interesting man in the world.
The arrest over the weekend of the head of one of the world's most sophisticated narcotics networks proved a major victory for both U.S. and Mexican law enforcement.
Mexican Marines led Joaquin El Chapo Guzman away in handcuffs on Saturday. Just before dawn Saturday, they stormed into Guzman's room and captured him without firing a shot.
They've been tracking him for how long?
Well, he escaped from prison in 2001. He had been in jail for about 8 years. He's been convicted on all sorts of drug charges. He's the guy who's responsible for up to 25% of the drugs coming into this country. They found dozens and dozens of tunnels in his operation. He's the guy who's always digging between the Mexico and the U.S. So they've been looking for him hardcore. He's public enemy number one. He was tops on the list of people that they were looking for. It's like finding Osama bin Laden, finding this guy.
Wasn't this guy in the Forbes list of richest people in the world or something?
He was number one on the Forbes list of richest people in the world in 2009. Yes. This guy's insanely rich. So far, since they arrested him on Friday, they have found over 46 vehicles that he owns, 16 houses, 4 ranches, and apparently he was just one of these guys who, I mean, he's become a folk hero in much of Mexico. He's beloved by the people because he spends so much money. He's the kind of guy who walks into a restaurant and says, all right, no one's allowed to leave until we do, but I'll pay for everyone's meal. So, I mean, he does crazy stuff like that all the time. It's really just they got to make a movie about this guy. So now that he's gone, what happens to the drug operation? You know, they don't just close it down because the boss is back in jail, right? He has two brothers. One of them is named El Pollo, the chicken, and the other brother is named El Chapo. And right now it's looking like El Chapo is going to be taking over for El Chapo. And I don't know. I don't know anything about him, but I can't imagine that he's going to be quite as colorful and beloved as El Chapo was. But we wanted to find out more about what's going on down there. So we asked producer Dave if we could talk to El Chapo, and I think we've got him on the phone right now.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Is this Luis El Chapo Guzman?
Si, this is El Chapo.
Well, El Chapo, how are you feeling about your...
Hold on a second. Hey, Tecate. Okay, hold on a second. Oh, okay, go ahead.
Okay. What's going on? What are you doing?
Are you having a beer?
I'm looking through dumpsters behind the restaurant for cans.
What? Looking through dumpsters? Isn't your family worth billions of dollars?
Yeah, how do you think you keep so rich?
Not by dumpster diving.
Hey, these cans, you get like 4 cents on every can.
Okay. Right. Well, I guess that's why they call you El Chapo. So, how are you feeling about your big brother now being back behind bars?
Oh,
can't believe Joaquin is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He puts an enormous responsibility on my shoulders now.
Yeah, you've got quite an operation to run now, right?
And the people. So, hey, your brother came in, he bought me dinner. Everybody get paid the dinner bill.
Right.
Hey, forget that. Those days are over. It's stupid. Who buys dinner for other people?
Well, I think he was doing it to be popular, because that way he could count on the people's support. They could protect him.
Yeah, but at the end of the night, who gets the bill? El Chapo.
Well, right, but El Chapo was the richest person in the world.
Well, it adds up, okay? A couple restaurant bills here, a couple cars here, a couple mansions here. Next thing you know, you're broke. That will not happen to El Chapo.
I don't think you're going to run out of money anytime soon, El Chapo.
Not the way I live, you're right. The way my brother lived, they would have, but not for me.
I think you got to spend money to make money in that business, is what
I'm
saying.
I think you have to make money to make money.
Well, that's hard to argue as well.
You're way stupid. Spend money to make money, no. You have to make money, then you make money. So I keep my money when I make it. You see me come to a restaurant, you pay your own damn bills.
Okay.
All right. You buy my dinner.
Okay.
You buy my dinner, I'll kill you.
Okay. Wow. Well, you are El Chapo.
I am El Chapo.
Yeah.
We're changing things in the way the operation is run. Very. We have to be much more smart.
Okay.
Uh-huh. We have to stop with all the extravagance.
Okay.
And we have to streamline the operation.
Like what? Okay. Like how exactly? It seems like a pretty big...
No more shootings.
No more shootings.
Tell anybody why.
You know the price of bullets are these days?
No, I know, but...
There was one scene where my brother killed somebody. 500 bullet cases found on the scene.
Wow.
500 bullets.
Yeah.
Ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. That's what I hear. Every time my gun goes off, that's what I hear. Ka-ching, ka-ching.
But isn't that how your brother controlled his enemies?
There's other ways to kill people. They're much more cost-efficient.
Okay.
What I do is I come up to you with a rusty nail, and I scratch you, and I give you a horrible infection. And sometimes 6-8 months later, you get so sick. And then maybe eventually, if it's not treated with the proper antibiotics, you die.
That doesn't seem very efficient there.
But rusty nails are a dime a dozen in Mexico.
Yeah. So cheap.
So cheap.
Yeah. I guess I can see that.
Also, I will call you in the middle of the night.
Right.
And wake up you from a deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Interrupt your REM sleep.
Right.
That takes years off your life if you don't get good REM sleep.
So you're just going to beat your enemies by making them tired.
Hey, is your refrigerator running? You better catch it. And then I hang up. And then, I'm so tired, I can't get back to sleep. El Chapo called me. And, 20, 25 years later, boom, you're dead.
But that plan takes 25 years.
I know, but I had the friends and family discount on my phone. Cost me practically nothing. By the way, who's paying for this phone call? Did I call you?
I don't think...
That's international rate. I gotta go.
No,
okay. Bye-bye.
Okay.
It is finally here this weekend. The movie we didn't know we needed has turned out to be one of everybody's favorite films of the year. It's Guardians of the Galaxy.
So here we are. A thief, two thugs, an assassin, and a maniac. But we're not going to stand by as evil wipes out the galaxy. I guess we're stuck together. Partners.
Are you telling me the fate of 12 billion people is in the hands of these criminals?
Oh, yeah.
Writer and director of Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn, joins us on the phone on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Mr. Gunn, welcome, sir.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Very good, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. I know what an insane few weeks you've had as we lead up to the movie. How are you feeling now that the movie is just about here?
You know, I'm feeling pretty calm, actually. It's been a long, arduous road. I haven't done much but make this movie for the past 2 years, and I just got back. I was in, Mexico, and before that, and in Singapore, and traveling all over for the film. But everybody everywhere seems to respond positively, and that's, for a filmmaker, that's about the best thing you can expect.
I can't imagine having to do that travel schedule that you just said, and most people not accepting your movie as being good. I'm sure that happens to a lot of directors.
I keep thinking that. I'm on this press junket now, and one, you sit in these rooms with one guy after the other coming in and asking you the same questions over and over again.
Right.
But the difference is that this time they keep coming in, and then they look at me either before or after, and they go, oh my God, I love the movie. It was so fun. And I go, and I'm kind of a negative guy in certain ways. And so I'm going, oh my God, this has just ruined every other press junket I ever did and every other one. Now I know you guys hated all my other films.
That's right. That's right. Now, I mentioned it's the movie none of us knew we needed because there were very few people besides hardcore comic book geeks who were out there even aware of Guardians of the Galaxy, much less expecting it to be made a movie. Was this a project that that had to be introduced to you from day one as well, James?
No, I'm a big Marvel comic book fan, and so I knew the Guardians of the Galaxy. I liked the Guardians of the Galaxy. It wasn't like I thought before this, you know, before Marvel brought it to me, it wasn't like I thought, oh my God, I got to make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. But once they brought it to me and I thought about it for a little bit, I wanted to create a movie that was, you know, wasn't necessarily like the movies I loved as a kid, like Raiders of the Lost Ark and, you know, Star Wars and things like that, but a movie that made people feel like those movies made me feel as a kid.
It looks like there are some real challenges, though, again, having not seen the movie yet, it looks like there are challenges of having things like, you know, a talking raccoon and a talking tree. I mean, those things as a filmmaker are tough to make work.
Yeah, well, it's tough to make work from a practical standpoint. I mean, the visual effects of it. But I think as a storyteller, it really was about, as silly as this sounds, when I said, oh, my God, there's a talking raccoon at the center of this. I mean, that came to me when the project came to me. I'm like, if you have a raccoon in the movie that's talking, then you have to have a reason. You have to make it as realistic as possible. And so it's really about grounding that raccoon as a real character. And in an original script, he was sort of this cartoon in the middle of the rest of the movie. And for me, the raccoon is really this mangled little Dr. Moreau creature, you know?
We're grown-ass adults having a conversation right now about how to make a talking raccoon more realistic. This is happening in real life.
Yeah, this is what I've come to. But I love it. I love the raccoon. The raccoon's my favorite part of the movie.
A lot of people were stunned when the announcement was made that Parks and Rec's chubby old Chris Pratt was going to be playing this character. But by all accounts, he's the greatest superhero ever. What a transformation he has made, both physically and with the kind of acting that we've never seen him do before, right?
Yeah, they brought Sarah Finn, who was the casting director, kept putting Chris Pratt and his picture in front of me as a casting choice for Star-Lord. And I kept saying, you know, the chubby guy from Parks and Rec, are you kidding me? That's a terrible idea for a superhero. And I even refused to see him for a long time. And then she somehow snuck him into a meeting with me.
Wow.
And I met, and this is the God's honest truth. He started auditioning, and within 20 seconds, I knew that he was the guy. And I had seen probably, or, you know, Sarah had seen probably over 150 people. We had screen tested over 20 people. And I mean everybody, A-list movie stars, you know, no names. And Chris was just, he was just a guy. And he was so good that for me, I was like, even if he stays chubby, he's still going to be a better superhero than everybody else we've been having audition.
How do you keep 150 different performances straight? They almost start looking the same.
Well, they don't look, every person is different. You know, and some people come in and do a good job. A lot of people come in and are so nervous they can't even do a good job. That's the thing when you're making a Marvel movie. It's, you know, first of all, I have a lot of friends who are pretty well-known actors, and you can have people come in who, you know, are your friends, and they're auditioning for you, and they're A-list movie actors, and their hands are shaking in front of you because it's such a big deal to be cast in one of these movies. And it's about the most uncomfortable part of this entire process.
You say to them, yeah, I'll call you back. Yeah. Yeah, no worries.
I have to tell you, I can't think of a series of movies that have been of such high quality as this batch of Marvel movies over the past few years. I mean, it's just, it's you don't ever want to be the director who blows the streak, right? Because as great as all of these have been recently.
You know, I like some of them better than others, and I think overall the quality is amazing, and some of them are really amazing. I think Cap 2 was great. I think the first Iron Man was great. Avengers is great. And so it's really about, you know, but I think what Kevin Feige has done, who's the head of Marvel, is just taken what was done in the Marvel comic books for so many years and created this shared universe, which has been a completely different way of, you know, approaching cinema, really. And it just works so well because the Marvel comics as a kid works so well, and now we have the technology to achieve in film what we were always able to do in, you know, print.
And how gratifying is it for you as a comic book geek, James, to grow up and now not only be making these movies, but have Oscar winners and Oscar-nominated actors just lined up to be in them? Like, in your film, you've got John C. Reilly, and you've got Josh Brolin, you've got Glenn Close, you've got Jaimin Hansu, you've got Benicio Del Toro, Bradley Cooper. I mean, it's unbelievable the caliber of actors that want to do these films now because they're great.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is, to me, having my pick of, you know, actors who I admire so greatly, like Benicio Del Toro, he's definitely a hero to me, and have him act in my movie, and then even more to have him come and sit next to us, you know, at the premiere and just be, you know, giggling like a schoolboy at everything that happens on screen. That's one of the greatest feelings you can have as a filmmaker, is just, you know, being able to share with your fellow artists and people you admired as you know, when you were younger, you know, something that you do.
Last question from me for James Gunn, writer and director of this weekend's Guardians of the Galaxy. It's already been announced that the sequel's coming out in just now, under 3 years from now. When do you have to actually start working on it?
I'm working on it already.
Yes!
I've already started, you know, plotting it out, figuring out what's going to happen. There's a lot of unanswered questions in the first one, and so I'm trying to deal with some of that stuff. And I've had ideas about the second one since, you know, I pretty much started the first one. I didn't, you know, I was making a group of characters that could go on and on and on.
And when do you start the third one?
That one they got to make another contract for. We'll see.
All right.
Congratulations, James. We know it's going to be great. We can't wait to see us this weekend. We really do appreciate you coming on the show today.
I appreciate it too, guys. Thank you.